Chris Brown, welcome to Talks with Tony. Rebranded, 2 year hiatus, and you're one of the first guests that I've invited onto it. And I am super excited because we first met many moons ago. We'd just been talking before we started recording, and it was about 12, 13 years ago. We'll obviously touch upon that and what got you to where you are today. But for those people who've not followed you on social media, don't really know who you are and what you're all about, who is the Chris Brown we see sat on the sofa today?
Yeah, very different man than when we actually met a long time ago. It's hard to categorize what it is that I do. Like, I'm a coach at heart. That's what it is. Like, I've been a coach since I was 15, 37 in October. So like more time than I haven't been, I've been a coach.
Yep.
And I think as a person today, it's like, what problems are in my life? Then I seek somebody to help me with that. Then I evolve and expand. Currently I'm in a teacher training program with a guy called John Wineland. And it's around intimacy, relationships, sexuality, masculine, feminine dynamics, which is like, that's probably the next movement in my career, is to work with business entrepreneurs, men especially, who sacrifice their relationship with their kids and their family and their wife for the pursuit of winning and succeeding in business, which is something that's close to my heart. And I didn't have the tools or the skills at the time. So that's kind of like where I am now. I consult on business, marketing, and sales primarily, but I also bring a lot of that experience in because I believe we have personal problems that extend out into business. And I think we separate them a lot of the time. And I think they're very one and the same.
I think that's fascinating. And what I love is that you started by saying, I look at where the problems are in my life, I seek help and advice. And then, so is your intention always, whatever you learn, whatever new skill set you have, or, you know, the personal skill set, to then put that out to the world, and the coach becomes the coach of that solution?
Yeah. And I think when I look at what my unique ability is, it's to take concepts, ideas, and teachings, amalgamate them together and simplify them into like a syntax or a sequence. And I've been doing that for as long as I can remember, whether it's fitness or it's mindset or it's nutrition, relationship dynamics. Like, I am a heavy investor in personal development. Probably like at this point, 200-300 grand into investment in personal development over the last decade. And I mean, that's no exaggeration either. It's like 20 to 30 grand a year, at least, in education every year. And it's really to solve the biggest problem in my life currently. Like, I'll seek somebody who is able to support me through that transition, whether it's business, sales, marketing, mindset, or, you know, therapy, or it's, you know, understanding new areas I want to take my business and brand. Yeah, I just seek that out.
So there's tons that I want to pick up, because there's always lots of little individual threads, and anyone who's listened to any of my podcasts knows that I go off on a tangent sometimes. I'm going to try and stick to them. So the first thing
that comes, tangents.
That's where the gold comes out, is the tangents that we go off on. But one of the things that I want to kind of pick upon, because there's going to be plenty of people who are listening to podcasts for inspiration, motivation, because they're doing exactly as you're doing, seeking their guidance, the advice, the mentors, the coaches. It's easy now when you're at the point, and there's a lot of people who go, well, it's easy for you. You know, you sat there with these successful businesses because you've created and supported many other people to build super successful businesses. And I'm talking 6-7 figure businesses. But you say, oh, very different person to the person I met years ago. Because when we first met, that was well before I got involved in personal development and self-development. So a lot of the concepts that you were teaching, even way back then, you know, the 2010, 11, were a whole new world to me. But you were getting involved in them, even though you're younger than me, which is very depressing. But how does someone who was, you know, openly building a business, the way that we met, because you're obviously from the Northeast, you moved to the Northwest, it was changing circumstance, changing relationships. How full circle is that, that that's what started and led to where you are now? So how did someone who is from a completely different background create multiple businesses in so many different niches? Where do you think the ability to spot the problem, provide the solution and simplify it came from?
Yeah, I think it's been something that I've like had since I was a child, honestly. As I say, like, I'm a coach at heart, and here's what I think people have to understand. We all have a unique ability of whatever that is. And we all have a personal story, usually of pain or struggle, that leads us to that unique ability, right? And so often our gold is where our pain is. Most people are unwilling to look at the pain in the shadow of their life, but that's often where the magic in our life is. And so for me as a coach, it's like, I have always been somewhat of a mediator between friends and social circles all of the time. And I've always been a person that somebody would come to listen or to give advice. And I've had very many businesses and endeavors. And when I say businesses, sometimes it might be a program or a course or just like a one-off thing that I do, but the thread's the same. It's like my ability as a coach to listen, understand, hear, decipher, and present a solution to a problem. And I think it doesn't matter necessarily what that thing is. I'm always like, what is the major pain and problem in someone's life? And then even if I don't have the skills, like, how do I acquire the skills? How do I find the skills? How do I hire the skills? You know, it's not necessarily me learning and developing to be able to expand to that skill set. It's like, sometimes there's an expert in an area, like, I'll pull them in and can you teach that piece for me?
Mm. So the bringing together of people is a big part of what you do in the coaching programs that you've either created yourself or nurtured for other people. Mm-hmm. It's easy when people will see you sat here as success and then go, well, it's all right for you. You can spend 200 grand, 300 yeah. grand. But obviously that started with the very first coach that you totally. Went to, the very first mentor. So for those people who are right at the start of their mm-hmm. self-development, personal development, or investing in themselves and their education. Yeah,
the perfect story. Like, you might not even know this, but when I actually moved to Liverpool 2009 because I met a girl in Ibiza, got engaged madly, like so young.
It's just what you do, go to Ibiza, get engaged, move cities.
For no, I didn't get engaged while I was there.
Okay, good.
Just for reference. We were together for like a year. I was at university, finished uni, moved down here, became a personal trainer. After about a year of PT and like my mind simply goes to, okay, like, the only thing I can do here is get like 30 something clients and that's it. I can charge more, but that's hard to do because there's a competitive market of other people in the health club that I'm in. And I started like look for what's next, and I've always had a seek in mind. So like the problem is I can't expand my income. I want to make more money. And so I started looking at like group training and boot camps and stumbled across a friend of mine. Now, you know, friend, business partner, first mentor, Paul Mort. Crazy wisdom is what I'll say. Like, he's incredible, huge energy. And I hired him as my mentor basically to help me launch the bootcamp. At that point in time, I'd split up with the girl that I moved down here for. Money was extremely tight. I'd moved out and I was on my own. And it was like Christmas of 2010. And I was at like a really pivotal point. I was like, either this bootcamp works or I move home.
Shit or bust.
Yeah, shit or bust. I had 600 quid in my bank account. That was the only 600 quid that I had. The only guaranteed income I had was basically the personal training clients to like actually show up and pay me.
Yep.
And Paul's program was like $3,000. It was 6 payments of 500 quid. Like, I give him 500 quid of my 6.
Not knowing where the rest had come from.
Yeah. Like, it was literally my rent. Like, that 500 quid was my rent. So like, if that payment, I was like literally fucking off, I was going home. And we launched like first week of January, started promoting, launched a free week trial, like the 21st of January, ended up getting 30 people there. All 30 people signed up for like 100 quid. I made $3,000. I had $3,000 in cash in my hand. And like the fucking tears were coming down my face like that day. And I literally like got out of my car, ran to the bank, just like
you have to run
scared,
to the bank in Liverpool.
Yeah. $3,000, like not literally in my hand, but like
thankfully,
$3,000 in my pocket. You know, just like put all of that money in the bank. And then I was like, fuck, thank God. And then, you know, within 60 days, that was like 60 clients. Within 6 months, it was generating six figures. And then it was like, I mean, you were probably at the peak of that point. The outdoor boot camps, like 30, 40, 50 people showing up. It was really before anyone was doing it too.
No one else was doing it.
And arguably more expensive than anything else. It was like 70 quid a month at the time, which was, you know, a lot. And then we launched, Paul and I launched 26 outdoor boot camps right across the UK. So like I took a risk,
yeah.
A huge risk. Like it was a faithful decision. Like I just trusted. I had this conversation with the men's group that I meet with every other week this morning. And it's like this, there's a knowing, there's a call, and there's an intuition that there's something more. And there's a desire in our life to achieve, accomplish, be, or actually reveal who we are to the world. But there's also a fear of doing that. And I just said to my friend, like, it's a lack of trust.
Trusting in yourself and in other people.
Yeah, and that the path is already there and you just got to let it unfold. It's like faith and trust. And I think that's what holds people back sometimes. Like I'm, you know, the 20, 30 grand a year of education now is arguably easier to make a decision on than it was to make that 500 quid of investment. Yeah. I also committed 3 grand to Paul that I didn't have.
Yeah. Do you think that's why, you know, it was a case of, I'm a man of my word, I've said I'm going to do this. Because I think of me if I'm doing things like that, and I always use a phrase, which the numbers are way out of kilter, but a phrase that I've often used and many people will have heard me say if they've followed the podcast on me on stages is, I'm 99% fueled by a desire to succeed, but one by spite.
Yep.
For every person who tells me I can't do it or I shouldn't do it, I'll be honest, it's probably 50-50 or 60-40, if I'm really honest. Do you think a lot of that was the whole saving face as well? Because you were a young man in a city that, you know, you'd moved to and new people in, but the easy option or the option that the people who care for you most is quite often, you know, well, you've tried it and it didn't work, just come home. Did you have that in the background? Were people telling you, you know, it's time to, you've tried it, you've tested it? Or did you tell other people that you were going to commit, you know, your rent money, the last money that you had?
Yeah, I actually had a conversation with my mum. My mum's like, supported every decision that I have made and trusted me. And I'm lucky for that because a lot of people actually don't have that. My mom's not like a risk averse person. She's actually probably on the other scale. Like
very gung-ho.
Yeah, extremely. I mean, she bought a derelict farm when we were 15 and developed it into a big equestrian center. So like I witnessed that, hated it at the time, reflect back and think it was really, you know, pivotal in my growth. But I was in a weird place. Like I had nothing anyway. I'd moved away for like two years. Like a lot of the friendships that I had, I'd let fizzle. The friends that I really had down here were associated with the girl that I moved for. I only had clients and friends in the gym. And I was like in a weird spot. And I often say to people, like, I don't have a place that I feel like is home for me. And I think that part of that is moving away.
Yeah.
Like home doesn't feel like home. Here's like, it's home because my children are here, but it's not necessarily the place I'd choose to be if they weren't around.
Would you say that leads to you being the type of person who can then, you know, because you're not stuck in one particular place, because we've just been talking about the ability and the freedom to travel or to move or relocate, et cetera, that many people are doing now. Do you see it as a blessing or a curse, you know, or do you see both?
Everything? Sometimes envy people who like just know that
this is home.
Yeah, this is the place. I sometimes envy people who don't have big dreams and desires, because I think often that like is a, it's a gift and a curse.
Yeah.
Like it's this thing that like, I just can't not do it. And it's an obsession. And sometimes I get down that rabbit hole. Sometimes I wish that my dreams and desires were like, you know, grounded and small. Because I've made so much money and I've piled so much money back in and I've made so much money and piled so much money back in. And I sometimes think like, wow, that was a lot of money. Where the fuck is it all gone? You know, like when I think.
But it's led to where you are today.
Totally, yeah.
Are you happy where you are today?
I'm where I'm at now is where I'm meant to be. And I think happiness, like people seek happiness in my opinion. And I think happiness is a moment. In the same way we wouldn't want to be sad all of the time, we wouldn't also want to be happy all of the time. I think the polarity and dynamic of life is the thing that actually brings joy. And I think it's like understanding that all seasons of life have opportunity and often, you know, growth follows pain. Pain is the thing that motivates us more than anything.
Agreed.
To move, to get shit done, to get in shape, to get healthy, to get over a relationship. And it would be a very bleak place to be if like happiness was the destination.
Because then like what's next?
Exactly.
Obviously that's, you know, something, it's the entrepreneurial case that you have, you know, we've done this, what's next? Moving forward. It's led to you creating really successful businesses. So from, you know, we always say from small acorns grow great oak trees. You built a very successful business that many other people have modeled. And I was, you know, there's been many a time I've not wanted to show up. And I think that was probably the start, although I've never really looked at it. I suppose I have a huge thank you to you.
Yeah.
Because the me of 2000 and I think it was 2011 we met.
Yeah.
This was before I'd even contemplated setting up businesses, understanding, you know, personal development and self-development. I was very much the employee mindset, you know, go to work, get paid, all of those different things. And I never really, that was my first understanding of how important accountability was. Mm-hmm. It was a huge part. And, you know, let's not downplay what you created. Mm-hmm. It may have been 30, 40 people, but many of us are still friends from meeting in a boot camp in the middle of, you know, I still remember, you can still melt fat when it's snowing. Fucking press ups in the middle of, well, we never even did it in a field. It was on the pathway.
Yeah.
In a field. The first session that I went to, so yeah. Owen, my eldest, was about 6 or 7 months old. I was so unfit. I hadn't trained at all. I'd really not focused on fitness and nutrition. You know, the first 5 or 6 months I didn't really show. And then the last three, I just ate cakes and, you know, it wasn't good for me. And the first session, I came to the free session.
Yeah.
And that was because my mindset there was, well, I've nothing to lose. I'll go to the free session. If I hate it, I won't sign up for it.
Yep.
I did this free session on my own, because that's how I found I do best, is if I go on my own rather than go with friends and family members. And I distinctly remember thinking I was going to die during this session. Burpees, horrific. And everyone was saying their goodbyes and I left a little, like, shot off. And it was because I needed to go and stand behind a tree and be sick. So the first time we ever met, yeah, you made me vomit. But I signed up because I thought, well, this, how many other people are here and they're doing it? And many of them have been for many months and they got, yeah, good results. And I suppose that was my first kind of, we always see it, you see all of the before and afters, all the rest of it. And I was looking for a quick fix and it wasn't.
Mm-hmm. No.
But the accountability in that group of, you know, WhatsApp groups. And I think this is like, you look at what people are doing now, that's still what's working. WhatsApp groups, mm-hmm, accountability groups, Facebook groups, and you had all of them in there.
Yeah.
How did you then systemize that? Because initially it was just you. Mm-hmm. You'd rock up in your car with your equipment. Yeah. Everyone would, you know, do what they needed to do. So from there you moved into creating your own space, getting the gym and then moving online. How did that grow and who helped you along the way?
Yeah, I actually admire that space and time, that person that I was then, because like I was so naive, like, but also so ballsy.
I think naivety goes a long way when you start a business.
Yeah, like I remember just like driving around in my car, like Ford Focus at the time, like driving around listening to like The Secrets of Attracting Money, like Joe Vitale, fucking Tony Robbins,
Wayne Dyer,
like, yeah, just like everybody that I could consume, because I was driving around so much in between clients and I was just, yeah, constantly consuming stuff. So it made me like really, I guess naive is not the right word, like just ambitious and bold.
Bit of both.
Yeah. And I think, again, like what I've, a gift of mine is being able to see like a lot of things and go like, this is the sequence. And I actually, I'm a great practitioner. I'm a great coach, an amazing mind at what I do. When it comes to actually operations of a business, I'm actually better a layer up.
Really?
I'm not like a, I'm not great at managing.
Yeah.
I'm better at leading and vision. And I often need somebody to like execute some of the nitty gritty stuff. I love doing like this stuff, like speaking, creating, you know, being on camera, creating products, creating processes, but like actually the nitty gritty of business, like I don't really enjoy. Like I'd rather just somebody take care of that.
Leverage has a huge part to play in growth.
Mm-hmm.
Who did you leverage to? How did you do that? Was this the coaching that you had from Paul Moore?
Yeah. Paul was a huge part in that time for sure. Like Paul was probably, you know, even a step, like a big jump ahead of people. Like he was studying from people in the States at the time. Mm. He was dubbed the bootcamp king at the time.
The bootcamp king.
And what's been really beautiful about our relationship is like we've contributed to each other like a lot over the years. And his initial investment in me, like he was like straight away, like we're going to do something together, like out of all of his clients. And then he ended up going down a breakdown, diagnosed bipolar and going through like a really bad patch, mm-hmm, as we had the boot camps and scaling. And we kind of systemized it all together. I did like the operations of how to run the sessions and things like that. And he did the marketing side of things. And yeah, he was just massively pivotal. And you know, Danielle, my ex-partner, like arguably we built a lot of that together. Mm. She's probably the unsung hero that like kept me sane a lot of the time. And I'm grateful for that. We still have a good relationship and that's really important for me to have a great relationship there. But then, yeah, like I've just sought out mentors and coaches along the way to like, mm-hmm, understand and also just test as well. I think it's weird. I've been in this like coaching and mastermind. Like I've had my mastermind in digital business for like 10 years now, which is mind blowing. Because
madness.
I sometimes see people like come fresh onto the scene now and like they're talking big things. And I'm like, wow, I've been doing this a long time. And like, I've got to remind myself sometimes how long I have actually been doing it. But I think this is like a really it's not a natural way. Like we talk about investing in ourselves. We often think about investing in like a person or a program or a course. I think a portion of like what you earn should just be invested into testing every month. So when it comes to like marketing campaigns for the gyms, like I figured a lot of that out by just being like, okay, like I'm going to let me spend £1,000 a month on ads. And if I can just get £1,000 a month in terms of clients, like at least I'm buying data.
So break even was the goal initially. Yeah.
I am willing to break even on this in order to figure out how to do it.
Which a lot of people aren't willing to do.
It's like I'm buying customers for free though, right? Like, so that was my mentality. I'm like, even if I get five clients and I make £1,000, I'm buying five customers for free. It costs me nothing. They pay my marketing. We were just talking about other people's money, right?
Yep.
And that was my mentality with the gyms. It's like, let me figure out how to use other people's money to scale my business.
Which... a lot of that comes from the things that you're listening to that, you know, this is one of the reasons that I wanted to relaunch the podcast. And we've just been talking about what a podcast is, why we're doing it. Cause you've obviously done your own and you've put pause on that cause you've got some changes and we'll talk about the transitional period you're currently in. A lot of that is a lot of the unsung heroes are the people who run and make it all work in the background. And one of the things that we were talking about before we hit record was the fact that you have helped grow so many businesses that many people will have known of and heard of, but have no idea you're doing this in the background and how you can then replicate that in your own business. Cause sometimes you're too close to it. So you're doing the testing, you're doing the measuring. Do you think that is because you are, you know, deep down you're a heart-centered coach and you get gratitude from seeing other people succeed?
Yeah. Like I think I'm in a really interesting place now. Kind of the pinnacle of fitness coaching is the before and after, right? But I was always really driven by like what comes beneath that. Like I came here for this weight loss result, but you know, as you said before, like all of these other things happened. Yeah, friendships, community, you know, self-development, growth. You'll know I was talking about mindset, self-development back in like 2011, big part of it. And now it's the same in like business. Like I get so many screenshots. Like I had, you know, five clients do 30 grand last month who started with me making like three, four, five, 6 grand a month. And those are great. And those are actually what bring people in. But you know what? Like one of my favorite things is I had a one-on-one call with one of my clients the other day. She's like, I went away on holiday for 2.5 weeks. Normally like me and my partner by the end of that would be like at each other's throats. Yeah. So we would have been, and I'd like drilled her beforehand. I'm like, you're so in your masculine right now. Like do this, 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 this. And I had tears, man. She was telling me like, everybody was commenting about how connected they were, how, you know, a brother was making jokes like, oh, by like day seven, watch them step, like
waiting for it to blow up.
And she said, we had the best time. We even extended the holiday. And I'm like, that's the stuff that touches me.
Where does that need to help people in that way come from though? I know you said from a young age.
Yeah, it's actually like driven by codependency, what I've realized over like hours of therapy. Like what I realized is I began to build like codependency in my business. And I think a lot of people do this and a lot of our like childhood wounds manifest in business because they're one and the same. And you know, business is relationships, except just non-intimate relationships. And so many of the things that happen in our intimate relationship play out in the subtle in business too. And so, yeah, I'd like it's a genuine desire, but there's something that I get back from it, you know?
I like the
recognition,
that honesty.
Yeah, the recognition, like the desire to prove my worth in the world, the desire for people to see me as like, you know, an oracle or successful, like it's, you know, it's self-driven and a lot of us are driven that way. The work for me the last 3 years has actually been like, how do I still maintain my desire to help, but detach from the need to be recognized or honored or appreciated for anything other than who I am?
And is that the focus of your work right now? You feel like you've kind of come out the other side that you're still deep within that? Where are you?
Yeah, like I'm deep in that work, still deep in therapy and coaching and things that help unpick that. I'm actually into like karmic and lineage work right now, which is really interesting, which we can get into. But now, like I have much less attachment to a client other than like, here I am playing a part in this client's life for a period of time that is suitable to them. And if they choose to move on, that's the right thing for them in their life. I remember clients leaving was like an emotional like breakup.
That was my next question. You took it personally.
Yeah. And like, not even personally, like it fucking hurt. Like I wasn't like, fuck you. Like,
da-da-da. Why would you leave me?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Would you then question you? What have I done wrong?
Yeah. Like why? Wow. And they go to other providers and then it would be like a big process, man. Mm-hmm. Like 24, 48 hours. I would like feel it.
Literally like a loss, like a grieving.
Yeah.
So is that what led to you seeking, because you've always sought help of mentors, of coaches, mm-hmm. et cetera, is that what led to you going to therapists?
My marriage broke down and realized that there was a lot of stuff for me to really work on, for sure. And then as I'm in therapy, I'm starting like, oh, there's a pattern and a theme here that's not just limited to my intimate relationship. And I've always been pretty self-aware. And I guess the transition over the last 3 years has been less about what information and knowledge can I acquire and how do I get to know who I am better? And that's been my maturity and growth. Like, I think I was very good at taking information, delivering it in my own way. I think a lot of people do that and that's great. Like study, read books, do everything. I was reading a book a week for the best part of a decade. Now it's like I spend more time with self and understanding who I am. Like we all have this like life that's been given to us in many ways, this pattern, this program, this paradigm. And that becomes like a backpack that we carry with us for the entirety of our life. Most people aren't aware that they're carrying that backpack. And now the work is like to be, okay, like this is my toolkit that I was handed. I can choose to use those tools in a very different way than I have been up until this time. Like this doesn't require a sledgehammer. This requires, yep. you know,
all I've got is a hammer. Sanding. That's what I'll use.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, that's been my work now is to really unravel those patterns. I can remember like a distinct conversation with my therapist, Matt. He's been on my podcast as well. He's great. And I called him one day. I was like, Matt, I have like 3 clients leave in a week and it feels like a breakup. Like, what is this? Like, so I was like, do you think I've got codependent relationships with my clients too? And he just started laughing like, of
He was
course.
Waiting for you to have the realization.
Yeah, that's how you operate and navigate in the world. Like, they won't leave me if I'm valuable to them.
Wow.
And yeah.
So how have you broken that now? Obviously you've been through therapy, still going through therapy. And I think I'm forever saying, because once I started with, and I suppose you were the mm-hmm. first kind of, because I think a lot of the time when we think mentors and coaches, I think, you know, my mentors in property or my mentors mm-hmm. in public speaking, but actually I'm fully aware. And I stand on stages even to this day and say, my issue is if I don't have someone holding me to account, I would have given up many a time, but mm-hmm. if it's like one more, you know, it was you there on a text message, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, every week. And when I went back to work, sometimes I'd be working a late shift. And there were a few times, like if I'd let you know in advance, you'd know in advance and be like, okay, what are you doing?
Yeah.
But there were a few times where it was like, the weather's a bit shit and it's rainy and I don't want to go. And you've no idea how difficult my life is, Chris. Yeah. And the hard part for me is that sometimes I get a message and be like, well, you're only letting you down. And it was like, mortified.
I think it was pretty harsh then.
No, but it was what I needed. Yeah. And even now to this day, if I don't have someone, you know, saying one more rep of physically or, mm-hmm. you know, in business or, you know, one more viewing or one more gig, you realized with your therapist that you had someone there to touch upon. And one of the things that I'll always say is you don't stop doing the thing that's getting the results.
Yep.
That must be, you know, you must have had some full circle moments where those clients who then left came back, that whether that be in the fitness industry mm-hmm. or whether that be, you know, they've gone off to test the competition and then go, actually their ads and their stuff is shit and I should have stuck with you. Yep. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, like I actually had a message from a client the other day, one of the ones, I was actually in Istanbul at the time and he canceled. I was in Istanbul on a week by myself. I went for a little like break. It was a romantic fantasy of like working on my laptop in Istanbul, exploring the city. The reality was couldn't find Wi-Fi. Like I was having a horrible time. I was like, it was beautiful and challenging at the same time. And I actually made my flight a day earlier because this client canceled and it was like the fifth one in a row.
And this was recently?
Yeah, this was like 18 months ago maybe. And he reached out to me the other day, like saying like, looks like what you're doing is amazing. This, if we've got this like new text messaging system, so you don't have to do sales calls anymore. It's like, that text messaging thing looks amazing. Like, looks like you're smashing it in life. And I'm like, yeah, I had to fucking reinvent myself. Like,
how do you feel when people do? Is there a little bit of you that kind of wants to say, you know, fuck you?
Yeah, I mean, the pain motivates us, like, yeah, no doubt. And I think there is a part of me like that felt, I was in the midst of like a deep part of my separation from my wife. And like, these clients weren't getting bad results, I would understand, you know? And they go and choose to go to another person. Everybody's totally free to do what they want. But like, it felt extra.
Yeah, because of the space that you were in.
And like, clients were making like 10 or 15 grand from the ad campaigns that we were running. From like a grand spend, 1,500 spend, and then go to a different provider to save like a few hundred quid.
Don't look at the cost of the shovel when you're digging for gold.
Yeah, so and that's just never how I've done business personally. And I think like the lesson that I've learned is like not to judge other people by my own standards. Like, people are free and independent to choose what they want to do with their life and where they put their money. And yeah, I used to take it. Personally. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So what about those people who are like right at the start now? Because it's, you know, you're over a decade down the line, you've mm-hmm. invested heavily, not just in terms of monetary terms, because you've invested heavily in terms of time that could or maybe should in some instances have been spent elsewhere. Mm-hmm. What about those people? Because I always want to give people, you know, real life advice on things that they can do. For those who are setting up a business right now, or those people who are maybe where you were 18 months, 2 years ago, where mm-hmm. there are, you know, they're doubling down on a business and the personal relationships are suffering, or vice versa, they're spending and so much kind of time off that the business isn't getting it. What tips and advice can you give to people who are either starting out or really struggling right now in business?
I think this is like, it's very pragmatic and practical, is to actually look at what moves the needle in all parts of life, right? And so to be able to go, in my business, what are the core three things that I do that actually moves and grows my business? In my relationship, what are the three things that are most important in order for us to stay connected and loving and open? In my fitness, what are like the one or two things that I need to do to stay in shape? You know, what are the one or two things that my kids need? When we have like those key performance indicators, those KPIs, like, it's very easy for us to go and put our attention into those things and say no to a lot of everything else. I'm pretty big in my life right now on like, every yes is a no somewhere else and every no is a yes somewhere else.
Challenge and support.
Yeah, so if I choose to put my energy into something, I have to understand that that energy cannot be required elsewhere. And so if you look at like 10 units of energy and you can spend those 10 units of energy every day, like, you can go in a linear line, like, pretty far. If you break that up over four different things, you're not going to go as far in each of those categories. And so it's really identifying like, what is the things that make the difference, and do only those things. I think, especially in business, there's podcasts, there's Instagrams, there's so much. LinkedIn, people are like, why are you not on LinkedIn? Your clients are on LinkedIn. You should be on LinkedIn. I'm like, I fucking hate LinkedIn. Like,
I'm with you there.
I'm just not doing it. It's not a leverage point for me right now. Could I get clients? Yes. Is it a channel I might utilize down the line? Potentially. Mm-hmm. Is it the thing that's going to move the needle right now in this season of life? No.
So this is really interesting for many people who will be maybe sitting thinking, oh, well, you know, I hear him saying this and her saying that, because there's a lot of advice out there. And sometimes the challenge is who you take your advice from, or getting it from too many different sources.
Yep.
So there will be many people out there now who are, rather than doubling down, are you a believer in doubling down on one strategy, one system, one process, get results and then move elsewhere? Do you think you need to keep your fingers in a lot of pies?
Yeah, I think the dogmatic approach of one size fits all advice is actually something that limits people. And I was kind of thinking through that question as you were asking it. And I was like, there's so much information available, podcasts and this and that, and you could listen to all that. And those things are healthy and helpful, but I think people get lost in that.
Yeah.
And then they think that they have to replicate that because they don't identify the strategy for their business in order for it to grow. You know, most people could make 10 to 50 grand a month every single month with a social media channel, one.
So let's dig in there, because, you know, you did start out mm-hmm. having invested your, you know, five of your last £600.
Yep.
Shit or bust approach, mm-hmm. you know, it worked mm-hmm. because you had no choice. Do you believe that? I'm a believer in sometimes when your back's against the wall and you've got no choice but to succeed, it's the best place to be in.
Yeah, like, some people lean into it and some people crumble. And I think it's leaning in. And I think at that point in time, I used a Facebook profile to grow a six-figure bootcamp outdoor with no overhead, right? and I didn't do anything else. Like, my strategy was simple. Once every 4 weeks, I have a free week. My clients invite their friends to come for free. If that person signs up, I pay my client 50% of what that person pays. And that was my entire strategy. I show up on social media every day. I do content. I get people engaged. I get my clients to tag in and check into each thing. And then once every 4 weeks, I invite them to a free trial. The people I interact with and engage with, I send a message to get into to a free trial. Arguably now that I'm more skilled, I could have done that even better. But at the time, that's all I focused on. I had a cycle. Every 4 weeks was a free week. The 2 weeks before was about promoting the free week. The week after was about onboarding new clients, and the cycle repeated, and the anxiety roller coaster was equally there. You know? Like, but I think it's like I really knew what it was that made the business grow. Mm-hmm. And I think when we have ambiguity around that, we don't know our offer, we don't know our pricing, we don't know what it is we do to generate leads, we don't know how to make sales, we don't know whether our offer is something that people will continue to buy and pay for. Mm-hmm. When we have ambiguity in those areas, then it becomes very difficult for us to scale anything.
Absolutely. And I think that's for you. One of the phrases that I'll always say is a confused mind doesn't buy. And if you're confused about where your energies are being put, mm-hmm. or if there's any confusion around your offer, then your audience members don't know. And I think that's a big challenge right now. So if we're always saying, you know, you need a coach, you need a mentor, and you've had them for decades, how does someone then choose a mentor or a coach? Or, well, firstly, what's the difference in your world between a mentor and a coach? And secondly, how do they choose them?
Yeah, I think in today's market, it's relatively easy to find a coach. It's difficult to find the right one. I have like an internal gut check now, and I'm like, is this person aligned with who I am becoming as opposed to who I am right now?
Is this when you're choosing a coach or mentor?
When I'm choosing a coach.
Not when you're choosing a client. Do you use that still?
Still, yeah. Good. Yeah, because we'll get to that, but like a bad client can actually hold you back. The energy, a bad client is the energy of five good clients. And so it's not the same money. Like a £1,000 client that is a bad client and a pain in the ass is going to be worth $5,000 in good clients.
And the upside down.
Yeah, exactly. It's not the same money. There is that thing, like fit is like a light switch on or off, in my opinion. It's like you either a match and a fit to work together or you're not. And again, saying yes to a client that's a wrong fit is actually saying no to a potential new client that could come and show up. We say yes to that through fear instead of having the trust and faith that something better will come along for us. But in terms of choosing a coach, it's like, I think now we've got the luxury of consuming their social media, being on their podcasts, and don't judge like a following. I think there are so many, we were just talking about this before, there are so many amazing practitioners that have zero following. Like Matt, my therapist, is arguably being one of the biggest influences in my life over the last 3 years, and he doesn't do social media. So if I was to judge him by like his Instagram, I'd be like, who is this guy? He's got no knowledge. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Yeah. Equally, there are great promoters that aren't great practitioners who have big followings. And I think in today's marketplace, like we give way too much levy to followers and not enough to credibility or connection, or if there's a resonance of whether they're going to be able to help us or if they're an expert in solving the problem that we have. Like some of us would rather be the client of like a successful and famous coach who has a big following for the clout and the ego that comes with that, as opposed to somebody that can actually solve our problem. And sometimes it's about hiring the person that's one or two steps ahead, not 10 or 15.
How does then someone find, because I agree completely with what you're saying, and quite often the people who've had the biggest impact in your business or your life are quite often the ones who, and this is one of the reasons when we were talking earlier on about my podcast being interviewing people with, you know, big social media profiles, big businesses, but quite often also the people who are the unsung heroes are the ones who are great practitioners, but not great promoters, or who would never have really had the opportunity. So let's give some practical advice then. How did you find Matt? Do you get what I'm saying?
If
he's not got a massive social media presence and the common practice is, I need a coach or a mentor in X area. So I'm going to go on Google. I'm going to go on, you know, their Instagram pages. I'm going to go down a funnel of all of this SEO marketing that they've got.
Yep.
How do I then determine the good ones from the bad ones?
Yeah. So Matt was a referral.
Ah.
So network.
Same process.
Yeah, always. And at the time, I'd newly moved out of the family home. And as all men do, I made, you know, judgment that maybe like I needed a sex therapist or whatever, a relationship therapist, like, because I didn't, there was a gap there.
Filling a void.
Yeah. And what I realized was that what I had was like, again, it's the same thing, personal problems that manifest in business, relationship, life, whatever. And I just like figured out a new area of work that I didn't really know that existed in terms of men's work and being around a group of men. And Matt was involved in Men Without Masks. Craig White, who is the founder of Men Without Masks, was actually a client of mine from like a year earlier, and I had no connection or understanding. So it was quite synchronous like at the time. And Matt and Ryan, who's the Urban Iceman, who's a friend of mine now, had a one-day event called the Mansphere. My friend was like, we should go to this. And I nearly didn't go. And I'd booked on to Men Without Masks because Craig wanted help with the marketing. He was like, I think you've got to come and like experience it and be in it. And I was like, really wanting to get into that element of work, like a 5-day retreat. And yeah, I went to see Matt, give him a hug, went through this experience. Like Matt's an amazing breathwork practitioner, and just had this big release, like massive, like tears, crying my eyes out, like really felt a lot of the grief that I wasn't feeling, you know, the tears, like I felt many tears that I'd never cried in my life in that moment. And I said to Matt, like, I'm booked on Men Without Masks in like 3 weeks time. Like, I want to make sure that, as I do always, like, I want to go in there fully prepared. Like, can we do some one-on-one sessions before I go? And so I did like 3 consecutive one-on-one sessions with him. And then we went into the retreat together. And he describes it now, you know, I was with him a couple of weeks ago as a peer in a men's circle, but he was like, that day that I met you, like, you know, you were very rigid and like, you were a little bit closed, and it's like who you've become now is so amazing. But yeah, like there was like a synchronicity between the men that I'm now associated with, like Craig, who's a client, was linked to Matt. Matt's linked to Martin Bone, who's a meditation teacher in Liverpool and also a great friend of mine. And so it's just kind of that sphere of work. And that's what led me to work with John Wineland, who's my teacher now. I mean, his teacher training program. So it's like Matt put me to John.
So it's been the like the 6 degrees of separation, isn't
massively.
It? Links to links.
Yeah, exactly.
So when you talk about kind of the growth in terms of your life and you as a person, you have this whole different demeanor about you than when you talk about success in business. Mm-hmm. One question that I really want to ask, which I don't ask of many people because I think sometimes it's very generic and a very like, what's success to you?
Yeah.
It's so overused, but I'm really intrigued to know your understanding of it, because you've experienced success talking about, you know, the going from however much per month to 6 figures or 7-figure businesses, tens, hundreds of thousands of pounds. I believe that wealth is one thing, but where's success now? Because you're a whole different person than you were back then. Yeah. How would you define success right now?
Well, I definitely define like being successful as the typical way a man does, is to like carry, you know, for me, a successful husband was to provide and protect, provide income, protect my family. And, you know, that's really where I prioritize my energy. And a lot of men will say things like, I'm doing this for my family, except it's actually for their own egoic pursuit. And they get let off the hook because a man's role is to provide and protect. As long as I'm providing, tick that box, I'm good. You know?
So it's actually running away from other things.
It's a patriarchy. It's an old paradigm that no longer exists. And in today's world, like I believe to provide is actually way deeper than to provide income. It's to provide presence and ground and awareness and depth and clarity for your feminine partner. Like that's what I believe is the thing. Because there are these other currencies that men can cultivate that are far greater than wealth alone. I think beyond a few holidays a year, the home that you want to live in, a little bit of extra income, like there is limited benefit to the female in a heterosexual, you know, male-female relationship of that man accumulating more. Mm. And I think we can get lost in business in the accumulation of money and wealth and define that as success. I think it's very hard to get beyond visual success and I think there is an element of like, you do need to have money and to be sovereign in this world. Like, I think I'm proud of the fact that I'm sovereign. I can work anywhere. I don't need for anything. Actually, arguably spend less now and happier to make less money than I used to be. But for me, like I say to my clients now, this is a huge thing now. If I make your business better, but your life gets worse, I've failed. Mm. And I think for me, success now is to like, can I expand in all areas? Can I deepen as a man? Can I become more grounded in my transmission? Can I be more loving and open? Can I stay in the stickiness of conflict and be open and curious enough to navigate it? And can I grow my business in a way that life gets better, not worse, as it scales?
Again, absolutely tons inside of there, because there's still obviously that innate need. When you take it so personally, you know, if mm-hmm. I do this in your business, but this fails elsewhere, mm-hmm. I failed. So you still take a lot of kind of ownership of totally. Other people, which is both a blessing and a curse, because mm-hmm. it's huge for your clients, because they, you know, they have that sounding board, that advice, that guidance. So do you still see that being the case? You know, is someone only as successful if... Are you only successful in your mentorship, your coaching, your guidance, if people have theirs? Surely there's got to be some ownership on the individual.
Yeah, totally. I think it's like responsibility is 100% and 100%, right? We think of like responsibility in relationships and intimate relationships as like 50-50, mm-hmm. and it's not. You're not responsible for half and they're responsible for half. Like I'm responsible 100% for what I promise and what I bring. But I equally need 100% from you. Like if I'm bringing 100% and you're bringing 50, like this ain't going to work.
Yep.
I can't want this for you more than you want it for yourself. And where in the past I would rescue and I would step in and do 150% to their 50. Mm. Now it's like, it's much cleaner. It's like, this is, I'm shown up and I work on my vessel and my transmission so deeply that I'm so in tune that I can give you the thing that I think would help you and liberate you most. But I also need you to follow up and do the work.
Think that's such an amazing way to look at it, because quite often, and I love that you're talking about the, you know, the rescuing part and the being rescued. Sometimes mm-hmm. people will employ a coach or a mentor because they want to be rescued. Mm-hmm. Other times, you know, putting all of your own success in someone else's hands. But there's tons in what you've just said there in terms of how it's affected relationships, the ability to, you know, support and coach other people, protect other people. I'm sitting here and I have a very strong masculine side even as a woman, but I'm sitting here thinking, isn't that such an archaic viewpoint of the provide and protect? Mm-hmm. And I don't need providing for, I don't need protecting, mm-hmm. you know, but there is always absolutely. A part of me, because I'd still be, you know, my husband is still the first person I go to when, you know, things go wrong. So it's understanding so many layers below the kind of top surface level stuff of success. So what I've noticed is the amount of, I'm very fortunate that I've interviewed a lot of different people from all mm-hmm. different backgrounds, different, you know, worlds, but I've noticed that the majority of people who are very successful in their own terms, and I think mm-hmm. that's really important, mm-hmm. is they've come full circle. They've made all of the money. They've earned all of the income. They've had the successful business. And only after that point do they then realize they don't need all of the wealth. They don't need all of the, you know, that time is important and being, you know, showing up both physically and in terms of your ability to be fully present in the room. Do you think you have to have reached the highest heights to then understand, you know, it's the kind of the challenge and support there is really important. Do you believe people have to have hit the depths of the low to understand the high, the whole, you know, you can only really see the light after the dark.
Mm-hmm. A mentor of mine, James Malinchak, many years ago said, you don't have to suffer with the problem in order to learn the solution.
I like that.
And so you don't have to be, he goes on to say, like, they say experience is the best teacher. It's like, I disagree. Other people's experience is the best teacher. You don't have to fail in order to understand that that's a bad idea. For example, if I tell you there's a monster in the cupboard, don't go in that cupboard because there's a monster in there. You don't have to go in there and figure it out to understand there's a monster there, right? And I think sometimes that's what we actually punish ourselves. We think that to be successful in something, we have to punish and sacrifice and give up part of ourselves in order to achieve or accomplish something. Even if a wealthy, wise man, for example, came to me and said, don't do that. Like, I did it. I sacrificed my family. A lot of men will just be like, okay, cool. Thanks, bro. Cool story. Let me figure it out myself and then do the same.
or say, okay, I won't, completely unaware that they're doing it. So
yeah, because their pattern will play out. Yes. So they're not doing their inner work. They're not understanding like what's deeper and what's driving them. Like, why do you need $100 million or why do you need $10 million? What void are you trying to fill? Mm. I think we only determine whether we're success or failure if the thing that we're looking to accomplish happens in a specific time frame. And so somebody could be walking around feeling like they're a failure right now, that their business isn't at the level that they want. The only problem is the expectation of how quickly that would happen, not the fact that they're doing the thing.
Yeah, that's so true. So, okay, what is next for you then? Because you've had, you know, success in varying degrees and varying different things. You've gone on this, and we were talking earlier about how funny it is when people think the journey of a roller coaster, but you've experienced success and in some instances, you know, challenge or perceived failures of that client left me. You're going through this whole transitional phase. You're still there, even though you, you know, you're coming out of some difficult times. Mm-hmm. What's next for you?
Yeah, my focus right now is my own transmission. Like, I'm just fully committed to like my own depth, presence and awareness, and to again build a deeper relationship with self and to be a mirror for others and also permission to others in order to claim the thing that is truly in them. The teacher that I'm working with right now is by far one of the most impactful teachers that I've ever worked with. And the things that he's allowing us to move through and supporting us with is like such a deep topic and challenging area that for many people, they would just ignore or overlook, like the karmic lineage stuff I was talking about.
You need to dig on that.
So we all have a karma in our life and often it's not our own. And so when we look at karma, it's like, I did something to someone and that will come back and bite you in the ass, right? That's what people say. Yep. Karma's a bitch, right?
Yep.
That's the phrase. But we all have a lineage and a history and a family structure. Mm-hmm. And we all have a karmic energy and residue from that lineage and that family and that structure. So we could be dealing with something like trauma that was three generations back that transcended the culture of a family system, which then manifested into pain and wounds for us.
That's like unfathomable.
Yeah. So if you consider World War II as an example, this is a common pattern. Now, my great granddad was in World War I as a soldier and in World War II as a naval officer. You know, lost countless friends, lost a baby while I was away. And so he, you know, my granddad and his twin brother grew up with a father who wasn't around. He was off at war, comes home with PTSD and, you know, unable to be as fully present as he would need to be for his boys. His boys didn't even recognize him when he come home, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old. The fact that the mom's got to stay at home in poverty, the fact that that structure then, you know, though that generation of people grow up with like one of the most traumatic times in history, it can't not shift the way in which they parent.
It's true.
And then it can't not shift the way in which the children learn, which then can't not shift the way in which they parent, which then can't not shift the way in which the parents learn, like the children learn. And then it just transcends until it gets to somebody that goes, you know what? I'm going to do the lineage, like karmic healing right now to transcend my ancestors and free the line moving forward.
Kind of break the mold and change the direction. Yeah. So how did you come across this? How did you, because that, by the way, is a whole other podcast. I'm aware of the time. I'm really conscious of your time as well. Yeah. And that's something I would look, because that's something I've never really heard of. Mm-hmm. It's not common knowledge. No. If it's not common knowledge, how's anyone ever going to break it? You're going to have the thought processes of people who are like, okay, past dictates the future.
Yeah.
Yet it does. The past does dictate the future. But we look at our own past from childhood and within our life cycle, less so than the looking back at our lineage. So one, how did you come across that? And two, how do other people kind of focus on that?
Through going through therapy, like I believe, honestly, like everybody should do therapy. Like even if you think, like don't wait for things to be bad to get better, right? That's huge. Like why do we wait until I'm a huge advocate of like never waste a bad crisis. Like use a crisis for all it's available for, because often our biggest growth follows it, right? Yeah. And also, like, don't wait for something to be so bad that you have to go and get some help. Like, don't wait until you're so out of shape that you hire a trainer. Don't wait until your business is so bad for cash flow that you get a mentor to help you. We often seek things when things are painful, and that's been my journey. But now, like, I'm actually seeking things when things are good, and I'm doing the work that I don't need to do, but I want to do, to free the people in my family, like of lines before who are no longer with us, and to impact my children.
Yeah.
And I mean, through my teacher, John, he worked with a lot of shamans from Toltec shamanism. So Don Miguel Ruiz, the four commitments.
Yeah.
That book is like, it's a great book. It's like it's four different commitments, but it's a great book. Aside from that, he is a Toltec shaman.
And he learned from him.
He didn't learn from him, but he learned from that lineage.
Yep.
And a lot of the work in which we do is like reconciliation. So for example, we've recently been going through every relationship that we've had with the feminine and the girls have had with the masculine, and gone through and gone like, where is there still something sticky? Where is there still something like, where am I still blocked? Where am I still, you know?
That's the itch not many people want to scratch.
It's work that people don't want to do. And it's like, this is why as a coach right now, like I'm seeking this depth. I want to free myself from this stuff and I want to work through it. And it's very 12-step in arguably in terms of like redemption, but being able to go back into relationships and go, you know, this is where I didn't show up. This is where I didn't receive your love. This is where I wasn't fully available or present, and allowing like the hook that keeps two people entangled in resentment to dissipate and dissolve.
I'm fascinated by this and I would love to do an additional episode all around this.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, even in business reconciliation, how many fractured relationships are there in business? How many clients have you had a fractured relationship with that just feels sticky and icky and you wouldn't do business again together? Like there's so much in our life.
And you think that's holding us back from growth within the business then as well?
Yeah, because then how do we react when we come across a new business that triggers us in the way that somebody else did, right?
Yep.
Business deal gone bad. Like how does that hold us back? How do we hold resentment? You know, what, you know, if I have a 5 kilo kettlebell in my hand, I'm going to be able to hold that for a period of time.
Yeah.
The longer I hold it, the heavier it gets, the more energy it requires to keep it in my hand.
Mm.
And it's the same with resentment, the same with conflict. It's the same with tension. Like the more in which we hold that thing, the more impact it has, and the more energy it steals.
It's true. And I think sometimes what we do is we focus on dealing with the issue at hand rather than the root cause of it. Mm-hmm. I'm fascinated by all of this. So I would absolutely love to dig deeper on all of that. That's definitely a separate episode though, isn't it? Because that's totally. Not like next 5 minutes.
Can I give you a quick example?
Absolutely. Like,
so my nan, she passed away, bless her, last year. And I came back from Men Without Masks and at the age of like 35, we'd never once said, I love you to each other. And she loved me deeply and I loved her. And I'm such a fucking loving person. Like to my kids, like I love them so much. And I've got to do this. Like, I knew she was pretty unwell at the time. Called her up and was like, hey, just want to say, I love you. I lived with her for a period of time as my mum bought the derelict farm. Thank you so much for everything that you've done for me. I've never said this before, but I love you. And I want you to know that. And she's like, just know that I feel the same way, but I can't say the words.
Wow.
That is karmic. That's not hers. That's her abandonment as a child. That's her pain as a child. That's her not feeling loved and appreciated as a child. Like that's karmic to the point which, you know, I don't think my dad exchanged an I love you with his mum.
Yeah.
And my dad started the work there arguably because he was so loving towards us. And then that transcends to me. And then now I carry the baton and I'm like, right, I'm going to do what I can in this lifetime to transcend this painful lineage. Mm-hmm. Then I give that to my kids and I give them the baton and then they continue to do the work. And then ultimately, as we grow as a generation, things should get better. The pain and the wounds and the scars and the things that we deal with and the abandonment, rejection should over time get better. Although there will there'll still be other fractures. Like I'm a co-parent now, you know, I split, my parents are still together. There's that work that my son's going to have to do and my daughter's going to have to do.
That was my question. You know? What happens if someone further down that line is your intention to just, I'll give you all of the tools, I'll showcase how it's done and we have to put some hope and some faith in.
Totally. I think it's nurturing. It's really, my job is not to remove all trauma, wounds, challenges, and struggle from my child's life or my children's life. It is to give them permission to lean into the pain and do the work that's required to transcend that, because they're going to go through their own path. And remember my mom said to me, like, I want to build this farm up, and like, I want to build some money for you and your sister. And I'm just like, listen, we're good. Like, enjoy your life. Like, I'm good. I'll take care of me. And that was probably hard for her to receive, because she's like, I'm really doing this.
This is why I've done it.
Yeah. But I'm like, I'm good. Like, I want you to enjoy your life. And I think that's the same thing with our kids. If we take desire away from them, you see this in second generational wealth, right? Yep. We take desire away from children, then what is it that they actually are here to do?
Yeah. What's the purpose?
Yeah.
Fascinating subject. I would definitely love to dig deeper on all of this. Do you think that is when we talk about what's next for you then? Because there's undoubtedly going to be people who want to follow you, understand a bit more about what you're doing, or they're hearing the success stories that you're creating for, you know, in the ad space for businesses in terms of marketing and promotion, in the fit space, helping people to build their businesses there. Is this your angle right now to do the work yourself in your own life, but to replicate that within the business world then?
I trust that me doing my work will be a signpost for other people to work with me to go deeper. I have a unique optic of working a lot with business owners and also doing this deep inner work and relational work. And what I would love to do is like combine those things together, so that I think a lot of business owners are being fueled by wound, by trauma, by trying to prove themselves, by trying to serve their ego or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Unknowingly and unconsciously.
Yeah.
And it's costing them in many ways that they don't know. And so I see myself doing the work at a deeper level, advisory wise, like that's where I would love to be, working with, you know, highly successful people who have kind of detached and lost themselves. They're out of shape. Their marriage and relationship isn't the way they want. They have fractured, you know, relationships with their kids. They're lacking presence. They're not showing up in the world the way that they want to. And that's really where I think my work will end up.
So it's leaps and bounds from where you've been previously. Do you think everything's led to you getting to this point?
Absolutely, yeah.
You believe in karma and serendipity. It's
like a journey of acquiring skills. And I do see that I will still have a role in profitability and helping people expand their brand and becoming more successful, because arguably the alignment thing is what I'll help people with, like find an alignment in the work that they want to do, but also the mission and purpose and person that they want to become in the world.
And that's going to be a very unique and a very diverse type of client, because the majority of people, I'm using a broad brush, but I'd say from your experience, from mine as well, most people aren't looking to do the work on themselves and to progress as an individual because they think they can't do that until they've, you know, kept the wolf from the door and they earn a certain amount of money.
Until shit hits the fan, right? And, you know, the proverbial term, but it's like until business fails, a marriage breaks down, something happens, then people go, you know what? I've tried everything else and nothing works.
It's the kind of last resort.
Yeah, I've been sober for like, I haven't drank alcohol for over 400 days now as well. Like my work is me.
Yeah.
Like I want to be the fucking vessel for people to be like, I need some of that. And like, I've got to treat me in the best possible light that I can, to be as healthy as I can, to be as vital as I can, to be as optimized as I can, as energized as I possibly can be, and to live my life in a different way to anyone else. And then that I think is the thing that people go, do you know what? Like something's missing. There's a gap.
Yeah. So it's not marketing in the same way that you would normally do, because in the, you know, the fitness world, which is where you began in terms of helping people to lose weight, get fit, et cetera, quite often that is, you know, a physical thing. Oh, I need to do this. In the, you know, marketing world where people are trying to get more clients and get more leads and target more people in that way, this is a very different space to be working in. Yeah. So how do you plan to market? Do you think it's a bit of a, you know, there's got to be some gravitational pull there.
Yeah.
People have got to be seeking for that. We don't just stumble across it one day and go, well, I was looking for someone to run all the ads in the background, but actually what I need now is, you know, a mentor and a life coach.
I think it is interesting. I have struggled with it, to be honest, to like, how do I package this into a thing or the niche?
Yeah.
Or, then I come back to like personal brand and it's just like, all right, I'm just going to live in that transmission and trust that that's enough for people to find me, seek me. Engage with my content. You know, a lot of what I've learned through sales and marketing and my ability to speak over the last decade that is allowing me to get the message that I have out of the world. One of the gifts that I have, I was not a natural gifted speaker. Like there are videos on me you can find 13 years ago on YouTube when I was a young personal trainer, like hungry in the world. And I've had to work hard to be a speaker on my voice, on my tonality.
Your accent is completely different to it was many moons ago.
Yeah. And you know, being a speaker trainer, it's the ums, the ahs, the pauses, the ability to think and speak at the same time. And so like the path that I've been on has equipped me with the skills to be where I'm at today.
I'm so excited for what there is to come. I think I'm really intrigued to see how this all pans out. And I believe that you should be doing, even though you're not going to be focusing on your own podcast, because that's been there and you're on your hiatus, I absolutely think you should be doing more and more, because what you're teaching, I think the world needs more of, but it doesn't yet now. Yeah. And I'm very excited. And if I can help in any way, shape or form, just by getting other people to listen to this podcast,
The big ask, I guess, is like, I want to be on stages. Like that's where I belong in my heart, like to speak at events. Like I have such a passion to like speak to entrepreneurs, and it's men and women too, you know, like you're saying, operating from the masculine women, like, because women can provide for everything that they need right now. They can look after themselves. They can make money. They can raise children. They can buy a home. There does become an element of the man doesn't know what to do anymore.
Yep.
The women are like, why do I need a man? And to be able to help the feminine people of the world surrender to their masculine partners in a way that they are fully vulnerable and open.
Yeah. Look at you looking directly at me like you're my next client, Tony. I'm fully aware.
And for the masculine to be able to lead the feminine to places that they can't go on their own.
And to also tap into their own feminine and it not be, you know, the old school of men should be men and shouldn't cry and you're there just to provide and protect. It's this whole
balance. Yeah. Like for as much as, you know, the masculine serves you in business, the feminine can serve the man in life, you know, and I'm huge on that. Like we do a lot of feminine based practice with John and breath. And I have no, you know, John talks about the masculine being tethered and grounded, but fully expressive. So if a man loses ground and he's expressive, then it becomes very, you know, very disturbing to the feminine, right? If they become more chaotic and feminine than the feminine being, then it's like, oh fuck, they don't know how to hold it. But if a man is grounded and tethered, yet expressive and open, like I'm afraid, but like really rooted down as he says that, I'm scared, I'm afraid, you know, I'm sad, I'm lonely, it's felt differently.
Well, there will undoubtedly be people within my network and I'd love to help you get on some of those stages. So if anyone, I'm conscious of your time, anybody wanted to follow, because I'm seeing some changes in what you're putting out on social media, the content that you're delivering, always delivered content, but the angles that it's changing to. So if people want to follow you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, I think just my Instagram, it's me, Chris_Brown is the place. I have my YouTube channel. All my links are on there. So
perfect. So one thing that I'll always ask guests, because I think you can be a good interviewer or a bad interviewer, or there's always gold that's left behind. So what is the one subject matter that nobody ever asks you about, or the one question you wish people would ask but no one ever has?
Sex and relationships.
Ah, subject matter that people don't touch upon. Yes. Why do you think people don't?
We're afraid.
Fear.
Yeah, I think for men, it's a performance endeavor. For women, it's a massive lack of pleasure for them. And I feel like very few men feel like they can take women to the pleasure that they desire and deserve.
Well, this is a whole other podcast. I know. So we're going to see some more of that content from you as well.
Yeah, I would love to step into that. That's been like, that's my own work now. Like I'm deep into a lot of work with that, with my teacher and sacred intimacy and deep into that area. And our sex drive is our life force. It's the drive behind our business. And there's a lot of shady and shadowy stuff that are in people's lives that like is unclaimed or unlooked at. Our shadow, the parts that we repress, suppress and push aside, the parts of us that we fear as dark and we don't like and we reject, are actually the parts of which we need to integrate and see as the wholeness.
So you're looking at how that links into not just the individual, but also into the business that they do and the way that they work. Wow, this is fast. It's like a whole web. It's very deep.
Sexual taboo. And that's the kind of work that we've been doing with our teacher.
Well, I'm going to ask you because it's very difficult for you to say no when we're here. Will you come back on and let's dig deep on all of those different threads that we've opened up today?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much for being a guest.
No, thank you for having me. It's like my favourite interview that I've done. So.
Oh, fab. Thank you very much for listening to Talks with Tony, or watching if you're watching in the right areas. We'll put all of the links into the show notes so that you can contact Chris should you choose to, and watch out for the next one.